The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Book 6, Part 5. Sirs, how should I lie quiet in my grave, unless you suffer me wring drop by drop, my brain dry, make a riddance of the drench of minutes with a memory in each, recorded motion, breath, or look of hers, which, poured forth, would present you one pure glass, mirror you plain, as God see glassed in gold, his saints, the perfect soul Pompilia. Men, you must know that a man gets drunk with truth, stagnant inside him. Oh, they've killed her, sirs. Can I be calm? Calmly. Each incident proves, I maintain, that action of the flight for the true thing it was. The first faint scratch of the stone will test its nature, teach its worth to idiots who name Parian Copperlight. After all, I shall give no glare. At best, only display you certain scattered lights lamping the rush and roll of the abyss. Nothing but here and there a fire-point pricks wavelet from wavelet. Well, for the first hour, we both were silent in the night, I know. Sometimes I did not see nor understand. Blackness engulfed me. Partial stupor, say. Then I would break way, breathe through the surprise, and be aware again, and see who sat in the dark vest with the white face and hands. I said to myself, I have caught it. I conceive the mind of the mystery. 'Tis the way they wake and wait, two martyrs somewhere in a tomb, each by each, as their blessing was, to die. Some signal they are promised and expect, when to arise before the trumpet scares. So, through the whole course of the world they wait the last day, but so fearless and so safe. No otherwise, in safety and not fear, I lie, because she lies too by my side. You know, this is not love, sirs, it is faith. The feeling that there's God, he reigns and rules out of this low world. That is all, no harm. At times she drew a soft sigh. Music seemed always to hover just above her lips, not settle. Break a silence, music too. In the determined morning I first found her head erect, her face turned full to me, her soul intent on mine through two wide eyes. I answered them, "You are saved hitherto. We have passed Perugia, gone round by the wood, not through, I seem to think, and opposite, I know Assisi. This is holy ground." Then she resumed, "How long since we both left Arezzo?"
"Years, and certain hours beside."
"It was at... but I forget the names. 'Tis a mere post-house and a hovel or two. I left the carriage and got bread and wine and brought it her."
"Does it detain to eat?"
"They stay, perforce. Change horses."
"Therefore, eat. We lose no minute. We arrive, be sure."
"This was, I know not where. There's a great hill close over, and the stream has lost its bridge. One fords it." She began, "I have heard say of some sick body that my mother knew. 'Twas no good sign when in a limb diseased all the pain suddenly departs, as if the guardian angel discontinued pain, because the hope of cure was gone at last. The limb will not again exert itself. It needs be pained no longer. So with me, my soul, whence all the pain is passed at once. All pain must be to work some good in the end. True, this I feel now, this may be that good. Pain was because of otherwise, I fear." She said, a long while later in the day, when I had let the silence be, abrupt, "Have you a mother?"
"She died. I was born."
"A sister, then?"
"No sister."
"Who was it? What woman were you used to serve this way, be kind to, till I called you and you came?"
I did not like that word.
Soon afterward,
"Tell me, are men unhappy in some kind of mere unhappiness at being men, as women suffer being womanish? Have you now some unhappiness, I mean, born of what may be man's strength overmuch, to match the undue susceptibility, the sense at every pore when hate is close? It hurts us if a baby hides its face, or child strikes at us punily, calls names, or makes a mouth. Much more if stranger men laugh or frown, just as that were much to bear. Yet rocks split, and the blowball does no more, quivers to feathering nothing at a touch. And strength may have its drawback, weakness scapes."
Once she asked,
"What is it made you smile at the great gate with the eagles and the snakes where the company entered? 'Tis a long time since."
"Forgive. I think you would not understand." "Ah, but you ask me. Therefore it was this. That was a certain bishop's villa gate. I knew it by the eagles, and at once remembered this same bishop was just he people of old were wont to bid me please if I would catch preferment. So I smiled, because an impulse came to me, a whim. What if I prayed the prelate leave to speak, began upon him in his presence hall? What, still at work, so gray and obsolete, still rocheted and mitred, more or less? Don't you feel all that out of fashion now? I find out when the day of things is done."
At eve, we heard the Angelus. She turned. "I told you I can neither read nor write. My life stopped with the playtime. I will learn if I begin to live again. But you, who are a priest, wherefore do you not read the service at this hour? Read Gabriel's song, the lesson, and then read the little prayer to Raphael proper for us travelers."
I did not like that neither, but I read. When we stopped at Foligno, it was dark. The people of the post came out with lights. The driver said, "This time tomorrow, may saints only help, relays considered good, nor robbers hinder, we arrive at Rome."
I urged, "Why tax your strength a second night?
Trust me, alight here and take brief repose. We are out of harm's reach, past pursuit. Go sleep, if but an hour. I keep watch, guard the while, here in the doorway."
But her whole face changed. The misery grew again about her mouth. The eyes burned up from faintness, like the fawns tired to death in the thicket when she feels the probing spear of the huntsman. "Oh, no, stay!" she cried in the fawn's cry. "On to Rome! On, on! Unless 'tis you who fear, which cannot be!"
We did go on, all night. But at its close she was troubled, restless, moaned low, talked at whiles to herself, her brow on quiver with the dream. Once, wide awake, she menaced, at arm's length waved away something. "Never again with you. My soul is mine, my body is my soul's. You and I are divided evermore in soul and body. Get you gone." Then I, "Why, in my whole life I have never prayed. Oh, if the God that only can would help. Am I his priest with power to cast out fiends? Let God arise and all his enemies be scattered." By morn there was peace, no sigh out of the deep sleep. When she woke at last, I answered the first look. "Scarce 12 hours more, then Rome. There probably was no pursuit. There cannot now be peril. Bear up, brave. Just some 12 hours to press through to the prize, then no more the terrible journey."
"Then no more the journey.
if it might but last, always my lifelong thus to journey still. It is the interruption that I dread, with no dread ever to be here and thus, never to see a face nor hear a voice. Yours is no voice, you speak when you are dumb, nor face, I see it in the dark. I want no face nor voice that change and grow unkind.
That I liked. That was the best thing she said. In the broad day, I dared entreat, descend.
I told a woman at the garden gate by the post-house, white and pleasant in the sun, it is my sister. Talk with her apart. She is married and unhappy, you perceive. I take her home because her head is hurt. Comfort her, as you women understand. So there I left them by the garden wall, paced the road, then bade put the horses to. Came back, and there she sat. Close to her knee, a black-eyed child still held the bowl of milk, wondered to see how little she could drink. And in her arms the woman's infant lay. She smiled at me. How much good this has done! This is a whole night's rest, and how much more! I can proceed now, though I wish to stay. How do you call that tree with the thick top that holds in all its leafy green and gold the sun now, like an immense egg of fire?
It was a million-leaved mimosa.
Take the babe away from me and let me go.
And in the carriage.
Still a day, my friend, and perhaps half a night, the woman fears. I pray it finish, since it cannot last. There may be more misfortune at the close. And where will you be? God suffice me then.
And presently, for there was a roadside shrine.
When I was taken first to my own church, Lorenzo and Lucina, being a girl, and bid confess my faults, I interposed, but teach me what fault to confess and know. So the priest said, you should bethink yourself. Each human being needs must have done wrong. Now, be you candid, and no priest, but friend. Were I surprised and killed here on the spot, a runaway from husband and his home, do you account it were in sin I died? My husband used to seem to harm me, not on pretense he punished sin of mine, nor for sin's sake and lust of cruelty, but as I heard him bid a farming man at the villa take a lamb once to the wood, and there ill-treat it, meaning that the wolf should hear its cries, and so come, quick be caught, enticed to the trap. He practiced thus with me, that so, whatever were his gain thereby, others than I might become prey and spoil. Had it been only between our two selves, his pleasure and my pain, why, pleasure him by dying, nor such need to make a coil. But this was worth an effort, that my pain should not become a snare, prove pain threefold to other people, strangers or unborn. How should I know? I sought release from that, I think, or else from, dare I say, some cause, such as is put into a tree which turns away from the north wind with what nest it holds. The woman said that trees so turn. Now, friend, tell me, because I cannot trust myself. You are a man. What have I done amiss?
You must conceive my answer. I forget. Taken up wholly with the thought, perhaps, this time she might have said, might, did not say, you are a priest. She said, my friend. Day wore. We passed the places. Somehow the calm went. Again the restless eyes began to rove, in new fear of the foe mine could not see. She wandered in her mind, addressed me once, Gaetano! That is not my name.
Whose name?
I grew alarmed. My head seemed turning too. A quickened pace, with promise now, now threat. Bad drive and drive, nor any stopping more.
Too deep in the thick of the struggle, struggle through. Then drench her in repose, through death self pour, the plenitude of quiet. Help us, God, whom the winds carry.
Suddenly I saw the old tower and the little white-walled clump of buildings and the cypress tree or two.
Already Castelnuovo, Rome, I cried. As good as Rome. Rome is the next stage. Think. This is where travelers' hearts are wont to beat. Say you are saved, sweet lady.
Up she woke. The sky was fierce with color from the sun setting. She screamed out,
No, I must not die. Take me no farther. I should die. Stay here. I have more life to save than mine.
She swooned.
We seemed safe. What was it foreboded so?
Out of the coach into the inn I bore the motionless and breathless, pure and pale, Pompilia. Bore her through a pitying group, and laid her on a couch, still calm, and cured by deep sleep of all woes at once. The host was urgent.
Let her stay an hour or two.
Leave her to us. All will be right by morn.
Oh, my foreboding! But I could not choose.
I paced the passage, kept watch all night long. I listened. Not one movement, not one sigh.
Fear not, she sleeps so sound, they said.
But I feared all the same, kept fearing more and more, found myself throb with fear from head to foot, filled with a sense of such impending woe that at first pause of night, pretense of gray, I made my mind up it was morn. Reach Rome, lest hell reach her. A dozen miles to make, another long breath, and we emerge. I stood in the courtyard, roused the sleepy grooms. Have out carriage and horse. Give haste, take gold, said I. While they made ready in the doubtful morn, 'twas the last minute. Needs must I ascend and break her sleep. I turned to go. And there faced me Count Guido. There posed the mean man as master. Took the field, encamped his rights, challenged the world. There leered new triumph, there scowled the old malice in the visage bad and black of the scamp. Soon triumph suppled the tongue a little, malice glued to his dry throat, and he part howled, part hissed. Oh, how he kept well out of the way, at arm's length and despair. My salutation to your priestship! What? Matutinal, busy with books so soon of an April day that's damp as tears that now deluged Arezzo at its darling's flight? 'Tis unfair, wrongs femininity at large, to let a single dame monopolize a heart the whole sex claims should share alike. Therefore I overtake you, Canon. Come. The lady, could you leave her side so soon? You have not yet experienced at her hands my treatment. You lay down undrugged, I see. Hence this alertness. Hence no death in life like what held arms fast when she stole from mine. To be sure, you took the solace and repose that first night at Foligno. News abound of the road by this time. Men regaled me much, as past them I came halting after you. Vulcan pursuing Mars, as poets sing. Still, at the last, here pant I but arrive. Vulcan, and not without my Cyclops, too. The commissary and the unpoisoned arm of the civil force should Mars turn mutineer. Enough of fooling. Capture the culprits, friend. Here is the lover in the smart disguise with the sword. He is a priest, so mine lies still. There upstairs hides my wife the runaway, his leman. The two plotted, poisoned first, plundered me after, and eloped thus far, where you now you find them. Do your duty quick. Arrest and hold him. That's done. Now catch her. During this speech of that man, well, I stood away as he managed. Still I stood as near the throat of him, with these two hands, my own, as now I stand near yours, sir. One quick spring, one great good satisfying gripe, and lo! There had he lain abolished with his lie, creation purged of the miscreate, man redeemed, a spittle wiped off from the face of God.
I, in some measure, seek a poor excuse for what I left undone in just this fact, that my first feeling at the speech I quote was not of what a blasphemy was dared, not what a bag of venom purulence was split and noisome, but how splendidly mirthful, how ludicrous a lie was launched. Would Molière's self wish more than hear such man call, claim such woman for his own, his wife, even though, in due amazement at the boast, he had stammered, she, moreover, was divine? She to be his was scarcely less absurd than that he took her name into his mouth, licked, and then let it go again, the beast, signed with his slaver. Oh, she poisoned him, plundered him, and the rest. Well, what I wished was that he would but go on, say once more, so to the world, and get his meed of men, the fists reply to the filth. And while I mused, the minute, oh, the misery, was gone. On either idle hand of me there stood really an officer, nor laughed in the least. Nay, rendered justice to his reason, laid logic to heart, as 'twere submitted them twice two makes four. And now, catch her, he cried. That sobered me. Let myself lead the way, ere you arrest me, who am somebody, being, as you hear, a priest and privileged, to the lady's chamber. I presume you, men, expert, instructed how to find out truth, familiar with the guise of guilt. Detect guilt on her face when it meets mine, then judge, between us and the mad dog howling there. Up we all went together, in they broke, of the chamber, late my chapel. There she lay, composed as when I laid her that last eve, of the couch, still breathless, motionless, sleep self, wax white, seraphic, saturate with the sun of the morning that now flooded from the front and filled the window with a light like blood. Behold the poisoner, the adulteress, and feigning sleep too. Seize, bind, Guido hissed. She started up, stood erect, face to face with the husband. Back he fell, was buttressed there by the window, all aflame with morning red. He, the black figure, the opprobrious blur, against all peace and joy and light and life. Away from between me and hell, she cried. Hell for me, no embracing any more. I am God's, I love God, God, whose knees I clasp, whose utterly most just award I take, but bear no more love-making devils. Hence! I may have made an effort to reach her side from where I stood in the doorway. Anyhow, I found the arms I wanted, pinioned fast, was powerless in the clutch to left and right of the rabble pouring in, rascality, enlisted, rampant on the side of hearth, home, and the husband. Pay in prospect, too. They heaped themselves upon me. Ha! And him also you outrage? Him too, my sole friend, guardian and savior? That I balk you of, since see how God can help at last and worst. She sprang at the sword that hung beside him, seized, drew, brandished it. The sunrise burned for joy the blade. Die! Cried she. Devil, in God's name! Ah, but they all closed round her, 12 to 1, the unmanly men, no woman, mother, maid, spawned somehow. Dead white and disarmed she lay. No matter for the sword, her word sufficed to spike the coward through and through. He shook, could only spit between the teeth. You see, you hear, bear witness then, write down, but no. Carry these criminals to the prison house, for first thing, I begin my search meanwhile after the stolen effects. Gold, jewels, plate, money and clothes they robbed me of and fled. With no few amorous pieces, verse and prose, I have much reason to expect and find. When I saw that, no more than the first mad speech made out the speaker mad and a laughing stock, so neither did this next device explode one listener's indignation. That a scribe did sit down set himself to write indeed, while sundry knaves began to peer and pry in corner and hole, that Guido, wiping brow and getting him a countenance, was fast losing his fear, beginning to strut free of the stage of his exploit, snuff here, sniff there. Then I took truth in, guessed sufficiently the service for the moment. "What I say, slight at your peril. We are aliens here, my adversary and I, called noble both. I am the nobler, and a name men know. I could refer our cause to our own court in our own country, but prefer appeal to the nearer jurisdiction. Being a priest, though in a secular garb, for reasons good, I shall adduce in due time to my peers, I demand that the church I serve decide between us. Right the slandered lady there. A Tuscan noble, I might claim the duke. A priest, I rather choose the church. Bid Rome cover the wronged with her inviolate shield." There was no refusing this. They bore me off. They bore her off, to separate cells of the same ignoble prison, and separate thence to Rome. Pompilia's face, then and thus, looked on me the last time in this life. Not one sight since, never another sight to be. And yet, I thought I had saved her. I appealed to Rome. It seems I simply sent her to her death. You tell me she is dying now, or dead. I cannot bring myself to quite believe this is a place you torture people in. What if this, your intelligence, was just a subtlety, an honest wile to work on a man at unawares? 'Twere worthy you. No, sirs, I cannot have the lady dead. That erect form, flashing brow, fulgurant eye, that voice immortal, oh, that voice of hers, that vision in the blood-red daybreak, that leap to life of the pale electric sword angels go armed with, that was not the last of the lady. Come, I see through it. You find, know the maneuver. Also herself said I had saved her. Do you dare say she spoke false? Let me see for myself if it be so. Though she were dying, a priest might be of use. The more when he's a friend, too. She called me far beyond friend. Come, let me see her. Indeed, it is my duty, being a priest. I hope I stand confessed, established, proved a priest. My punishment had motive that, a priest, I, in laic garb, a mundane mode, did what were harmlessly done otherwise. I never touched her with my fingertip, except to carry her to the couch that eve, against my heart, beneath my head, bowed low, as we priests carry the paten. That is why, to get leave and go see her, of your grace. I have told you this whole story over again. Do I deserve grace? For I might lock lips, laugh at your jurisdiction. What have you to do with me in the matter? I suppose you hardly think I donned a bravo's dress to have a hand in the new crime. On the old, judgments delivered, penalty imposed. I was chained fast at Civita, hand and foot. She had only you to trust to, you and Rome. Rome and the church, and no pert meddling priest 2 days ago, when Guido, with the right, hacked her to pieces. One might well be wroth. I have been patient, done my best to help. I come from Civita and punishment as friend of the court, and for pure friendship's sake have told my tale to the end. Nay, not the end. For wait, I'll end, not leave you that excuse. When we were parted, shall I go on there? I was presently brought to Rome. Yes, here I stood, opposite yonder very crucifix. And there sat you, and you, sirs, quite the same. I heard charge and bore question, and told tale, noted down in the book there. Turn and see if by one jot or tittle I vary now. In the color the tail takes, there's a change, perhaps. 'Tis natural, since the sky is different. Eclipse in the air now. Still, the outline stays. I showed you how it came to be my part to save the lady. Then your clerk produced papers, a pack of stupid and impure banalities called letters about love. Love, indeed. I could teach who styled them so. Better, I think, though priest and loveless both. How was it that a wife, young, innocent, and stranger to your person, wrote this page? She wrote it when the Holy Father wrote the bestiality that posts through Rome, put in his mouth by Pasquin. Nor perhaps did you return these answers, verse and prose, signed, sealed, and sent the lady? There's your hand. This precious piece of verse, I really judge, is meant to copy my own character. A clumsy mimic. And this other prose, not so much, even. Both rank forgery. Verse, quotha? Bembo's verse. When St. John wrote the tract De Tribus, I wrote this to match. How came it, then, the documents were found at the inn on your departure? I opine, because there were no documents to find in my presence. You must hide before you find. Who forged them hardly practiced in my view. Who found them waited till I turned my back. And what of the clandestine visits paid? Nocturnal passage in and out the house with its lord absent. 'Tis alleged you climbed, flew on a broomstick to the man in the moon. Who witnessed or will testify this trash? The trusty servant, Margarita's self. Even she who brought you letters, you confess. And, you confess, took letters in reply. Forget not, we have knowledge of the facts. Sirs, who have knowledge of the facts, defray the expenditure of wit I waste in vain, trying to find out just one fact of all. She who brought letters, from who could not write, and took back letters, to who could not read, who was that messenger of your charity?
Well, so far favors you the circumstance that this same messenger, how shall we say, sub imputatione meritricit laborat, which makes accusation null. We waive this woman's. Naught makes void the next. Borsi, called Venerino, he who drove, and the first night when you fled away, at length, deposes to your kissings in the coach, frequent, frenetic.
When deposed he so?
After some weeks of sharp imprisonment.
Granted by friend the governor, I engage.
For his participation in your flight. At length his obduracy melting made the avowal mentioned.
Was dismissed forthwith to liberty, poor knave, for recompense. Sirs, give what credit to the lie you can. For me, no word in my defense I speak, and God shall argue for the lady.
So did I stand question, and make answer, still, with the same result of smiling disbelief, polite impossibility of faith in such affected virtue in a priest. But a showing fair play, an indulgence even, to one no worse than others, after all. Who had not brought disgrace to the order, played, discreetly, ruffled gown nor ripped the cloth in a bungling game at romps? I have told you, sirs. If I pretended simply to be pure, honest, and Christian in the case. Absurd! As well go boast myself above the needs of the human nature, careless how meat smells, wine tastes, a saint above the smack. But once, abate my crest, own flaws in the flesh, agree, to go with the herd, be hog no more nor less. Why, hogs in common herd have common rights. I must not be unduly borne upon, who just romanced a little, sowed wild oats, but scaped without a scandal, flagrant fault. My name helped to a mirthful circumstance. Joseph would do well to amend his plea, undoubtedly, some toying with the wife. But as for ruffian violence and rape, Potiphar pressed too much on the other side. The intrigue, the elopement, the disguise, well charged.
The letters and verse looked hardly like the truth. Your apprehension was of guilt enough to be compatible with innocence, so punished best a little and not too much. Had I struck Guido Franceschini's face, you had counseled me withdraw for my own sake, balk him of bravo hiring. Friends came round, congratulated. Nobody mistakes. The pettiness of the forfeiture defines the peccadillo. Guido gets his share. His wife is free of husband and hook-nose, the moldy viands and the mother-in-law. To Civita with you and amuse the time. To travesti us de raptu Helene. A funny figure must the husband cut when the wife makes him skip. Too ticklish, eh? Do it in Latin, not the vulgar, then. Skazins. Well, copy and send his eminence. Mind, one iambus in the final foot. He'll rectify it. Be your friend for life. Oh, sirs, depend on me for much new light thrown on the justice and religion here by this proceeding. Much fresh food for thought. End of Part 5 of Book 6.